Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. We're going to talk about our hopes for the future, for the opportunity to live in happiness. Really? I'm not kidding. What is the future going to be about? And so many people are saying it's about smaller communities that work well. And let's see if that can really work. There's an opportunity to find out if smaller communities can really be functional without the craziness of all of us humans getting together and making a mess of things. So to find out how it works, and if it works, I'm going to be talking with the two people who are the heads of the Ananda Village. It's a meditation community. It's actually a village, a community where people live. It's out in California, but it's also worldwide. There are centers all over the world. And so I'm really happy to talk about the people who made this film about happiness. We'll talk more about that. And I'm speaking with Jyotish and Devi. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you, Phil.
I'm so glad that you could join the show, because it's really important that you're pioneers. And the two of you are really pioneers, because you were there at the beginning of Ananda. That goes back to 1969. And can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, we started at the Ananda community in 1969, which is when it was founded. It was really a dream of the founder, Swami Kriyananda, a lifelong dream of his, to create a community where people could live in harmony and live for higher values. He had been a direct disciple of perhaps the best-known yogi, Paramahansa Yogananda, the author of Autobiography of a Yogi. And Swami Kriyananda had been his direct disciple, and Yogananda had also this dream of people living together with high values and simple living in relatively small communities. And so, holding that lifelong dream, Swami Kriyananda started that community in 1969. Ananda was the community, and both Devi and I were founding members here. So we've been through the whole adventure together for over 40 years.
And what an adventure. And I'm sure it feels like it was 100 years, or maybe it only feels like 2 years. And yet so much has happened in that time that, you know, you must have incredible stories to tell.
Well, we have a lot of stories. A lot of adventures have happened. You know that it's been a very, very interesting life, because in some ways we've been able to live our dreams, and in many ways not only our dreams, but the deeper dreams of many, many people who have high aspirations, but in some ways feel like, well, life just hasn't allowed them to live according to those. They've had to make compromises. They've had to do things that didn't really live up to their ideals or their hopes when they were younger, that life has kind of beaten them down. And to a certain extent, we've been able to live those dreams that people have had, not only for ourselves, but for others also.
Well, I think that it is a representation of our dreams for the entire future for this planet. We want it to grow up. I always preach that we live on a stupid planet and don't know any better. And yet there are many people who, like yourselves, who aspire to a much higher consciousness and a greater sense of sharing and honor. And so that's really what our future is about. And my expectations are that it's going to grow dramatically. Those inner senses, higher senses, are going to grow dramatically in our population in the near future. And
you know,
yes, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I don't think it's an accurate presentation, although I share it with you, to say we live on a stupid planet. Because I mean, Jyotish and I have traveled all over the world sharing teachings of yoga, meditation, the community lifestyle. And I think what I have observed is there is innate in everyone a vision of a higher life and how they are a part of that. But then people don't see models. They don't see examples. They see corrupt politicians and greedy corporations and, you know, on and on and on. And so we think it's not possible. But in large part, the Ananda Community Network, because we actually have 9 communities around the world, is to give people hope, but also a living example that the innate goodness and integrity that I think is present in every individual, that it can be made into a way of life that really works.
I agree, and that's the aspiration for the future, that we actually get in touch with our higher consciousness. And for so many people, it's a far reach still. And yet we see, you know, examples like Ananda and many other examples around the world where there are wonderful things happening, so many conscious people trying to make this a better world. It's just that within it, there's still so many potholes. One of my questions is, I've lived in spiritual communities in many lifetimes. I was with the Dalai Lama in Tibet a couple of lifetimes, as well as other lifetimes in Tibet. And then my last lifetime was in India as a devotee of Sri Ramakrishna. So this is why I have a spiritual radio show.
Right.
And I do live aspiring to the best that I can be, and I'd love to have people like you and so many other great speakers and leaders and role models on the show to help point the way. And then I question everybody, because it's a hard path. It's a big struggle in life, in this world. And I do come back to that, you know, I called it a stupid world, because there are so many people in this world who create too many problems for too many people and for the planet itself. And how do we get past the sticking points? And one of the opportunities, of course, with Ananda is the opportunity of living out spirituality through meditation and devotion, and so it's really a powerful, wonderful opportunity. And yet, I've worked with so many people. I'm a spiritual and intuitive counselor, and I've had so many clients over many, many years who have been to ashrams and have been disturbed by their experiences. And, you know, they were kind of very innocent and walked into what they thought would be an ideal environment. And it turned out that there were so many inner struggles going on there that it overwhelmed them. And so you are the two leaders who have seen it all. And I'm sure you know all the pitfalls and have seen many people come and go who perhaps couldn't fit in and had attitudes or had ego problems that would be disruptive. And somehow the community has to know how to take care of itself and keep striving for that harmony that doesn't always exist.
Well, you're certainly right. Ananda too struggles with certain of these issues. I think there are some basic things that might be helpful. One is that I think we're gradually, and as a whole population, as the whole Earth, we're gradually making incremental steps to higher consciousness. But if the expectation is that there's going to be a sudden leap, or that you're going to go to an ashram where everybody has already made a sudden leap and everything is fine. Those expectations themselves create the not only the potential for them being disappointed, but almost the certainty that they're going to be disappointed. So if the expectations are too high, they're going to lead to failure. On the other hand, if we don't have forward-moving or higher expectations, we simply stay the same. So I think there's a kind of a middle ground or a sweet point at which people aspire to be able to work from higher motivation, from higher consciousness, but also recognize that they may make mistakes and that they may not live up to their own ideals.
I was just thinking that probably the most important aspect of a community for this to be able to work out is transparency.
There needs to be transparency, and at least for Ananda, there also needs to be a lot of kindness and caring about people. That's one of the things that Swami Kriyananda, one of the fundamental aspects that he brought the consciousness into the founding of Ananda. In fact, we have kind of two basic tenets of the community. And the first is that people are more important than things, meaning kindness, seeing for the value of every individual, trying to help them reach their highest. That's more important than projects. It's more important than money. It's more important than any other thing. And so people are more important than things. And then the second tenet is from Sanskrit saying that basically says, where there is dharma or righteousness, adherence to dharma, there is victory. And so when you live in accordance with dharma, such things as truthfulness, love, kindness, nonviolence, non-stealing, those kinds of things, then where you live in harmony with those, then you live a life that becomes victorious.
Right, and yet the tripping point would become righteousness. because there would be judgment then of everybody who might not be perfect.
No, righteousness isn't something outside of yourself that other people can evaluate. Righteousness is your own alignment with higher consciousness, with, one could say, God's will, with a feeling of personal integrity. And, you know, one thing that, again, I think where Ananda differs from typical ashrams that you may have visited is our focus is we're really building a bridge between a meditative life, a spiritually focused life, and a life of practical responsibilities. We really try to balance meditation and service. That's very basic to our path. So, amusingly, some years ago, some people were writing a book about communities, and they came out, and we showed them everything we were doing, and the clinic we'd started, and our retreat for guests, and our book publishing. But underlying it all, everyone meditates here several hours a day, either in groups or individually. But so these people wrote the book, and we later saw it, and we were both disappointed and also a little amused because what they said was, Ananda is about businesses. And Jyotish actually wryly commented privately, he said, they came expecting a unicorn, and they found a workhorse. And so Ananda is very fairy. It's very grounded. And we face all the challenges of family life, raising children, running businesses, property management, paying taxes, everything that people in general, you know, general life face. But we add the component of daily concentrated devoted meditation. And that's, I think, another example that Ananda can give to the world. You don't need to leave the world and go to an ashram. You don't need to run away from family and job and all that. But add the component of meditation, which brings calmness and expansion of awareness, as you know, as a spiritual intuitive. And then it oils the machinery of human life. And that really is, I think, that and a lot of blessings from great souls that are guiding us has been the secret of why Ananda has survived and expanded around the world in these 45 years.
Yes, and I think that is the key, is the oil that meditation creates, because it allows for much more of an adaptability, of flexibility to find underlying truths and underlying happiness that sometimes our minds can't get to. I think everybody is working through their own self-love issues and self-worth issues, and that's usually the sticking points, or where the ego gets involved and people either have to challenge themselves or each other to prove that their love is enough. And so if we can connect to a greater oneness that can flow and help people love each other more and then hear each other more. I think it's about hearing each other, and you're both teachers, and you know, you speak a lot, but you couldn't be teachers if you didn't listen a lot and get it about what people need to hear from you.
So that's certainly true. You have to tune in to other individuals and where they're coming from, what they're really asking. One of the things that we learned from Swami Kriyananda was always to try to listen to the question that was behind the question, or the thought or the consciousness that was behind the conversation, because there's a surface level conversation or question that goes on. But then underneath that is sometimes a very different thing. For instance, a person may come across as being quite egoic and belligerent, but if you listen carefully, you may figure out pretty quickly that the reason they're acting that way is that there's a fragility and an anxiety underneath the surface. And if you relate to the belligerence, you simply increase that anxiety. But if you understand that that's where they're coming from, perhaps it's fear or some past issue that they have, if you understand that that's where they're really coming from and relate to them with kindness, that belligerence kind of like smoke just blows away in the wind of love.
Well, there's a saying that you have that I read on your website that you use to address all of the issues of the community and personal issues as well. And the underlying statement is, what is trying to happen?
Yes. Yeah, that's a very good thing.
I'll add that it's, you know, really to keep a community going for all these years, there's really an incredible art of working with people. And, you know, you as an intuitive counselor know the subtlety of working with people and trying to really listen to them. And what we've really seen over the years in this phrase, what is trying to happen, is how do we all tune into the highest perspective, the broadest perspective, whether it's on how to move forward with a project or how to guide an individual that's having a difficult time. And it's really been, I think, for me, one of the greatest lessons of my life to watch this process of group dynamics. When you get a person, a group of people, and people have differing perspectives, and one person wants this, another person wants that. But then if they all come together with inner training of meditation, and they say, I'm not trying to push my perspective, but what is really the highest synthesis of everyone's perspective? And then sometimes solutions come that nobody had thought of. Or you're trying to guide a person who's having a difficulty, and a few people are trying to really tune in and pray and meditate. How can we move this person into their next step in life? And then solutions come. So this, what is trying to happen, is really the art of decision making. But it's more than decision making. It's an approach to life where you're trying to draw the highest perspective in all the decisions and choices you make.
Right, and I've always said that the smartest people in the world are not the people who have the answers; they're the people who have the questions.
Very good.
And this is a wonderful question, and I think this is good for the audience, no matter where they are, to be able to sit with themselves and say, "What is trying to happen here?" and then listen. And as you say, magic happens, and answers come that you had no idea about.
Yes, so often as either individuals or especially groups, you come into a situation with your energy or your mind already committed to something. And if you're unwilling to be flexible and change, then you're just stuck on a track that can't go anywhere. And in group dynamics, small group dynamics, because, for instance, we have one of the ways that we help make decisions here is we have a village council of people who've been elected. We grew into that after several different attempts at making decisions. But the group of people in the village council, if they come in as so many elements in American society do in decision making, where they represent an opinion that is inflexible, then they come in and they don't find solutions, they just find arguments. And we've seen this terrible breakdown in the American government of the two sides coming in with absolute inflexibility and simply arguing, and the whole decision-making process breaks down. If people come into a situation saying, you know, I'm leaning in this way, but let me be flexible, let me hear what's trying to happen here, then it opens up, that listening process opens up the potential to hear something that is better than the idea that you came in committed to. And as you say, magic happens.
And what's interesting is that in a smaller community, you get to know each other so much better. So you can honor the inspirational uniqueness of each person, because everybody has their unique gifts and their different ways to hear and to understand things. And then everybody can treasure each other that way rather than having to feel like they know best and nobody else could have their all of the inspiration that one person thinks they have, rather that you honor the gifts of each person in the community.
You know, that's so true, and I think that's also the reason that we have a dynamic community movement, really, because as you were saying earlier, this aspect of people not having enough self-acceptance or self-love. And if when you get a group of people that have common goals and also, again, that are practicing meditation, we just keep coming back to that, because I know my life would be really a shadow of what it is if I hadn't had a commitment to meditation. I think my whole appreciation and experience of life would have been greatly diminished without meditation. But to live with others who see the highest in you all the time. And if you fall down and make a mistake, they just cheer when you get up again, not kind of laugh when you're lying down. And it's when people live that way, you just see how everyone grows. And whether you're the person fixing the plumbing pipes or the person in charge of teaching, it doesn't really matter. Every individual has a value, and that value is basically because we are all a part of God, and God, each soul is unique and beautiful.
Right.
Our guru, Paramahansa Yogananda, Kriyananda, our founder, was a direct disciple of Yogananda. And many people know him as author of Autobiography of a Yogi, Yoganandaji. And once he was with a group of disciples, and he looked at them and he said, "If you only knew how beautiful you are, I see you all as beings of light." And that's the truth of our being. And whatever the outside little surface tension may be, that's not who we are. And when you live with others who reflect that back to you, and if you make a mistake, if you whatever it may be, you say, "Come on, let's keep going. Let's not define ourselves
right.
by our mistakes."
What I love to do is to recognize the specialness in each person, and I feel so wonderful when I can exclaim that to them. You know, just I love to tell people how wonderful they are. And
you know, that's yeah. one of the secrets of life, because people respond to the energy that we give to them. And so if we see a person and we think of them as special, as somebody to be cherished, then they not only feel that, but they respond back in a similar manner. It's like
right.
a feedback system.
I used to do that when I was a soccer coach for my son's teams, and always I love to help the weakest players on the teams, because I would find what they were good at, and you know, I would extol that. And they would rise to the occasion and become really terrific. And it was amazing how inspiration like that helps, and it changes lives.
No, it's so true. We have a wonderful school system here at Ananda it's based on a book by our founder, Swami Kriyananda, and it's called Education for Life. And rather than trying to fit the children into a system, you know, as happens in most educational systems, we look at the child and say, what are their strengths? Maybe a child is really good in sports, but academics is hard for them. Well, we're not ignoring the academics, but we give them areas where they will succeed. And then when they start getting the confidence, then they'll come back to areas where they're weaker and they have the confidence that they can do it. But if you're always pushed up against reading disabilities or slowness with math, then you just begin, I'm worthless. And, you know, the whole paradigm crumbles for you.
This is so wise. And we're getting to the end of the show, and I've just loved talking with you about the work you're doing and Ananda Village and Ananda worldwide too. Is that you have centers all over the world, and I know that you've traveled a lot too, so they're not just out there doing their own thing. They're inspired also by the two of you, and you have a film called Finding Happiness. So can you just give the audience some connection info?
Yes, the easiest way to get in touch with the whole system is just www.ananda.org, ananda.org. And from there, you can find local centers, you can find information about this wonderful, wonderful movie, Finding Happiness, that is just coming out, being released.
Right. I really enjoyed it.
And oh, I'm glad you watched it. And there's also a website for the movie itself, findinghappinessmovie.com. So So that if you're particularly interested in the movie, you can go there. Or if you're interested in the community's movement, then Ananda.org.
Well, this is so wonderful talking with you, and I'm really glad you could be on Energy Stew. Jyotish and Devi from Ananda Village, and it's a great honor to speak with you, and you've been wonderful.
Well, thank you. It's been a wonderful conversation.
Yeah, and we enjoy coming on again and talking with you more. I feel like we're starting to make friends.
Let's do that. Great. Thank you so much. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org or 212-222-7748. Lots going on. There are online classes, and I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.